This podcast is brought to you by JBL. Employing the best methods and tools, audio technology is at the core of everything JBL creates. Never straying from a ground-up approach to everything they build, JBL has produced a prolific list of audio achievements, groundbreaking technologies, and revolutionary advances in the art and science of professional audio. JBL, passion for sound and those who create it. Learn more at jbl.com.
Hello and welcome to Tape Ops Discussion, where we call our friends and music community notables to chat about their favorite records. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to Discussion. I'm Jeff Stanfield, and we've got a great episode for you today. We've got my friend Mario J. McNulty here, and we're talking about one of my favorite albums of all time, Massive Attack's 1998 release, Mezzanine. When we were talking about what record that we wanted to have a discussion about, a quote discussion about, the Massive Attack record Mezzanine came up, and I think we were both pretty excited about that option for a chat. And I'll just start by saying it's one of my all-time favorite records, never gets old.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, and I was shocked to look at the date and see that this record came out in 1998.
Actually, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking about that this morning in the shower. I was going to say 97, but it's actually 98.
98. And yeah, I mean, regardless of 97 or 98, I put this record on and I'm like, man, there's nothing that dates this record really. There's a couple songs that I feel like sort of harken to that Portishead era trip hop thing.
Definitely, yeah.
But and certainly not in a bad way. But man, when you put this record on, it's sonically incredible. The songwriting's incredible. The mood is incredible. Do you remember anything about the first time that you got turned on to this record or heard it?
I was thinking about that this morning, trying to think about, okay, what was my origin to this? I don't have a good, clear answer. I mean, first of all, thanks for recommending it in a way, too, because it's one of my top, probably in my top 10. I mean, I love this album. Probably in my top 10 albums ever. I mean, at least top 20. I don't know how you even rank that stuff, but right. It's a masterpiece for me. I've listened to it thousands of times, probably. But because I think originally when you talked to me about this, I thought, how the heck am I going to pick an album? There's so many albums to choose from. And so this is a great, it made perfect sense. I thought, all right, I love this album. Let's talk about it. And then I thought, okay, there was a period of time for me personally in the mid 90s, I would say, where it was just a massive amount of, okay, pun not intended, but a huge amount of like musical discovery for me personally. So I was just getting into all kinds of new bands and music that I had never even known existed. And nobody in my school or friends or nobody was getting venturing out of. It was either like at that point, you listen to hard rock, metal, or something really hard and aggressive, or hip hop. It was like those two. Nobody listened to things outside of that. And then I started getting into playing in bands and all this, and I started opening up and discovering new music. And through that, somehow Massive Attack became part of that. It all kind of started with like getting really into artistic music like Bowie and Eno. And I remember reading lists about what Bowie would recommend in the 90s. And that, I remember, oh, I mean, it, because of him, ironically, I know that kind of came full circle for me. But it was like, oh, okay, what is this band Prodigy? Who is this guy, Scott Walker? What is Portishead? What the heck is Massive Attack? At that time, I think it was Protection. And it was just an incredible period of learning about these new bands and albums. But Mezzanine came out, and I guess you're saying 98, because I don't really remember exactly. But it took a minute. It wasn't as if I was waiting for the Massive Attack album to come out. There was so much going on at that time. But at some point, it became this record that was on constant loop, constant repeat. And I just thought, nothing, even the previous Massive Attack albums didn't sound like this. This was a brand new sound, a brand new energy, a brand new sort of darkness on their sound. I mean, Protection, they always had this sort of dark element in a lot of their writing, and Protection sort of, I think, kept going in that direction. Then Mezzanine came out, and it was like a whole new world. I mean, you went on a journey with this album.
It totally is. It's like a complete world that you enter into. And I mean, even from the opening track, which is Angel and features Horace Andy, which I'd love to get into the Horace Andy angle on this thing. But, you know, just the fade in.
I love the fade in. Yeah.
It's so crazy. It's so great. Not a lot of records start that way. And I thought it was so, just going back to it. I mean, it is a record that I put on all the time. And in fact, like, it is one of my favorites, but I realized, like, oh, there's half the songs on this I didn't even know the names of. But of course, these songs are like so deep in the fabric of my musical life.
It's a sonic journey, which all my favorite albums, in a way, are sonic journeys like that. It's almost, in a way, it's almost conceptual, because the one thing that is really great about this album, which might not get talked about a lot, is the sequence and pacing of this album, and they did a perfect job in sequencing this album and putting one song after the other. That, I mean, I think that's sort of a funny thing, but that's weirdly one thing that I really like doing at the end of albums, is I love sequencing albums. And that may sound like a weird little thing, but I really like it. I love pacing the albums, and it's not just always hit singles up front or something like that. It's, you know, especially if you're thinking conceptually, like, how does the song feel from one to the next? Energy, tempo, key, feeling. And sometimes that's really hard to describe to people, but they did a really phenomenal job, like you're saying, with Angel coming into starting the album, fading in, and immediately that bass line, which sounds like some synth bass line, whatever that is going on there, filtered bass line, it sets this dark tone for the album right off the bat. And then you have the drums coming in with the acrostic snare, which I have nicked so many times. I mean, it's such a hugely influential album. I work a lot with this programmer, Stephen Wolf, and he's a programmer, producer, drummer, incredible musician. But there's been many times we've been working together, and I'm just like constantly referencing Mezzanine. I mean, be like, yeah,
oh, yeah.
Angel, Teardrop, Rising Sun, whatever. I'm like, all right, remember that cross stick? All right, we got to get something like that for this.
I entered the realm of Massive Attack through the dub remix of Protection. That was the record that I first heard. And then I went to Protection. And to be honest with you, I didn't like it nearly as much as the Mad Professor remix, which was called No Protection. I thought that was just like a mind-blowing sonic journey. And it was honestly one of the first dub records that I'd really heard back in that, you know, at that time. I mean, I'd heard dub records, but I wasn't deep into it and like kind of looking, you know, looking for artists and looking at records and understanding how that whole thing worked. And, you know, so my point being is that, you know, Massive Attack has always had this huge dub influence on their music. And if you wanted to make the case that Mezzanine was a, in some ways, a dub remix record, I feel like you could honestly make this case. And the reason I say that is because you got a song like Angel, which was originally recorded by Horace Andy in 1973, I think, which was drastically redone for Mezzanine. And then, of course, Man Next Door, which is a song written by John Holt and performed by Horace Andy. And that one also gets a pretty radical reworking.
That's probably the most polarizing song on the album.
Well, why do you say that?
I say that only in my personal experiences of, you know, de now decades live having this album and friends that love this album and people giving their opinions on that song and whether or not they love it, like it, dislike it, whatever. That seems to be the one that is up for the most debate. I would just put it that way. I personally absolutely adore that song. I could listen to it over and over, but I'm kind of like that with the whole album. But yeah, it's definitely even going back to the pacing of the album, it's an interesting, curious song, the way that they did it and produced it and gave a vibe to it, the samples that they used. It's very unusual. It's a very unusual track. But one of my favorite parts of that is just that simple filtered guitar that supports his vocal. It's such a simple, beautiful sound, and it's just perfect for the song.
You know, the drum loop in that is when the levee breaks. You know, some people will go back and listen to it now and be like, oh wow, yes, it
Right,
certainly is.
heavily affected, you're right.
To have tracks like that, and for years I didn't really realize. First of all, this was my introduction to Horace Andy, so then that opened a huge door into his music and like his, you know, his career started out as like, you know, early almost soul ska reggae kind of world, and then it's obviously he's this very signature voice on this Massive Attack record. Yeah, I think in that way, like I said, I think that you could argue that, you know, that influence and that dub influence and that second wave dub that came, you know, to the UK, you know, out of Jamaica and was co-opted by guys like Mad Professor, and made Signature and is such a very unique sort of brand of dub music. Yeah, I felt like this record has so much more to offer beyond just the listening to the record. You know, there's so much more and doors and things about it that lead you into other musical explorations, which I think is such a like an incredible gift, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, how could you, in thinking of what you just said, how could you not mention Elizabeth Frazier
Sure.
singing on two songs, but most famously on probably the hit, if you want to call it that, on the song Teardrop, which is just, you know, a monumental song in a way. But she's a key figure on the album. And I mean, I remember hearing that, and she's easily one of my favorite singers ever. Just incredible voice. I didn't really know that much about Cocteau Twins at that point. I knew kind of who they were. Maybe I'd heard something, but then that, again, it's like that period of musical discovery, and you're like, one thing leads to another, and Bowie to Eno to Scott Walker to Massive Attack to whatever it is, and then to Elizabeth Frazier and Cocteau Twins and all that. But yeah, she's incredible on that. I believe is it Group Four, the other song she's on?
Yeah, Group Four and Black Milk as well.
Black Milk. So it's three songs. Sorry, so it's right, three songs. I mean, her vocals are absolutely stunning. But Teardrop has become a classic. I mean, that there are people that know that song and they don't know it's a Massive Attack.
Yeah, there's like that amazing Jose Gonzalez cover of it. There's so many covers of Teardrop.
One bit of kind of trivia, and I didn't know this until maybe a few months ago, maybe earlier this year, last year, but there was a lot of let's just say drama involving the creation of that song and which version was going to be used. But there was a moment in time where she might have not been the singer on that song, and Mushroom had given a demo of that to Madonna, and that was a very interesting thing to read about. This was Neil Davidge, the producer, co-writer, co-producer of Mezzanine, talking about this potential, and it ultimately was given the thumbs down, and they worked on another version that they gave to Elizabeth Frazier, and that ultimately became the version.
Yeah, there's nothing to, I can't imagine anyone else singing this, of course, because her vocal on this is the most like tender, fragile.
Yeah, she sounds like an angel on there. She sounds like it's this person that you can only dream about sounding this way. You know, this incredible vocal. Love is a verb. Love is a doing word. Fearless on my prey. Gentle impulsion shakes me, makes me lighter. Fearless on my prey. Teardrop on the fire. Fearless on my prey. And her vocals on Group Four and Black Milk are equally incredible, but Teardrop obviously is, I think you can say, the signature sort of single on the album, if you want to say there is one.
Yeah, I mean, Inertia Creeps is another one worth mentioning, because I think the production on that is so marvelous, and the guitar sounds are just so like, How did they get those sounds? This is a record that I, you know, as a producer and engineer, and you know this, you hear stuff and you go, oh yeah, I know how they know exactly how they did it. And I'm like, on this record, I'm like, ooh man, that's like, there's such signature, interesting guitar treatments. And, you know, Inertia Creeps is another one of those songs that, you know, I guess that song's about a sort of relationship that went on too long and was you could, you know, I was revisiting those lyrics and they're you know, you could read them as pretty dirty.
I it's funny, I didn't know that, and I don't generally, for any album, this is not a rule, but just generally speaking, I don't always read too much into the lyrics. Now there are times when it's very, you know, plain and explicit, and it's easy to understand. But I'm okay with the metaphor. I actually don't usually read too much into it. So, or unless I read an article about it, like, you know, somebody says, "Oh, this song is about this," or the writer themselves talking about it, I oftentimes will let that go by. I'll pay more attention to, you know, the musical aspects of it or the sound and sonics of it. So a lot of times that goes over my head. So I actually didn't know that about Inertia Creeps, but I believe you. Maybe it is some content like that in there, but I like the fact that this album is part of this too, where there's plenty of metaphor in the lyrics, and you can kind of take from it what you want. I tend to really like that. But I think that's great. I'm guessing it's 3D wrote those lyrics. I'm guessing. I actually don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I thought it might be Robert on that. I think that's what I read, that he wrote the lyrics on that, but I could be wrong.
I mean, there's a certain intensity to that song, which might be that kind of peak of the album in that way. It's a very intense song.
It has a very Middle Eastern vibe to it without being like, you know, going straight to like in a scale that's, you know, like a you know, an Arabic scale or like just overtly like Middle Eastern sounding. It's got this underlying theme, and I guess that was sort of based around, you know, time he had spent in Istanbul.
Okay.
And like I think he had recorded some stuff while he was there, probably just on like a handheld or whatever, okay. A little portable recorder.
That's very cool.
But I think that is. Some of that is embedded in the track.
That would make sense, and that's very cool. Yeah. There's a little bit of like word cliche in a sense, but it's really true. Like this album has all this like energy, vibe, grit, dirt, edge. All these things are really, really apply to that. And you hear all that in Inertia Creeps, but I think you hear it on the whole album.
It's just one chord too. It's just a drone. The whole song. It's just like, but you know, you never get the sense that it's not going somewhere or that it's, you know, stagnant. It's
well, that gives it that tension. That gives it that intent. That tension and that intensity is because it's sitting on that.
Yeah.
In a way, I mean, they use that to their advantage. I mean, I think you have to. And I love when this is allowed to happen, but I think a lot of times there are productions or songs that second guess, for example, sitting on a drone or something like that, whether that's really a good idea, and oh, we have to have this chord progression or this melody or whatever. There are times when I think that's oftentimes when it's just overthought and think people do the same thing. They force songs to be something that they don't necessarily need to be, and that's not the case here with Inertia. It's even sort of in the title in a way. It's like really sticking to that intensity and making something of it. It takes a lot. I mean, I love that they're fearless in doing that. It's really wonderful. Now look at that song. I mean, obviously Teardrop is more of a kind of a I guess you could say, a single kind of song, because none of the album isn't really singles. I don't see it like that, but Inertia Creeps is still also a signature song on the album for sure. See me on all fours.
I think the use of a song like Exchange was kind of interesting, going back and being a little bit more analytical about the listening. And this is a record, by the way, that I just usually just put on and enjoy as a listener, and haven't really thought that deeply about it, to be honest with you. It's just something that I enjoy musically so much, and I feel like it is, you know, takes me to a place and makes me feel a certain way. So just as just pure fan, I love this music. But you know, getting into it from the, aspect of record making, these tunes like Exchange, it's almost like a scene change.
Well, I was going to say, it reminds me of just that great sequencing and pacing of the album. I mean, it in a way, I think, I'm not looking at the vinyl right now, but I think that closes the A side.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and it closes the B side.
And exactly. And the opener to the B-side is, I believe, Dissolved Girl. Let me see.
Yep.
Which is sounds like that could be the opener of an album as well. But that song leads you back into this, like, dark world. Because, like you say, Exchange, it's a little bit of a breath of air. And you have this instrumental. If you haven't heard the album before, you don't know that you're going to hear another version of that with vocals on it and Horace coming back in. But you have that moment of almost relief, because Inertia Creeps is so brooding and intense, and you're done with it and you almost have to, like, exhale, and then Exchange comes in and it's just what you needed. It's just what you needed to keep this album on and to just keep listening, and you think, wow, this is so pleasing, it's so pleasant. Because there's not a lot of pleasant moments on the album. It's not that kind of an album. And then that ends, and right back in, Dissolve Girl fades in. And you get right back into that world of mystery. Because there's so much going on here that, emotionally speaking, that it's almost, it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride there. And you're right back on it.
There's not a lot of not a lot of room for criticism on this record for me. I can't be like, well, they should have left this off or anything like that, because there are no moments for that. It's a record that I don't want to pick singles off of. I don't want to pick tracks off of and put on a playlist. This is the playlist. This is the listening experience. And again, I can't sort of reiterate enough just how much of a gift the record gives in terms of all the other places and things to explore that it offers.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I often will do the same, actually, put the album on and just listen to that album. It's, again, not part of a playlist or not picking a single on the album. I just, I'm in that mood, which is, funny enough, quite often, put Mezzanine on and there it is. It just keeps playing and playing. And as much as I love Massive Attack, and I really genuinely love a lot of their work, Protection included, and lots of incredible music that they've done, but Mezzanine really stands out. That's an album that it doesn't dip for me in any way. There aren't songs that I skip over. There aren't songs that I don't like. It's a real masterpiece of, and I don't even know what the genre would be. I don't think that they're one of those bands that can be easily put into a genre, because it's, even Neil Davidish, the co-writer producer for that album, was sort of saying, like, it's almost weird to call them a band because it's such a unique sort of way that they're composing and producing music. But for whatever it is, that album really stands atop, and it's pretty monumental in that world of, you can say, part electronica. They have elements of trip hop, elements of band music. They have acoustic instruments. They have sampled music. It really has almost everything. Vocalists. They have instrumentals. It's a great blend of styles. It's a real masterpiece of the 90s.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate your time, and super fun to chat. So
awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Discussion is created by Tapeop, the creative music recording magazine. Free subscriptions are available at tapeop.com, along with our regular podcast and online content.